What in heaven's name is going on in here?
Chapter 61. Jeannie Galetta is in trouble for the first time in the history of the universe. If you'd told me at the beginning of the school year that Jeannie Galetta was going to get sent to the office for anything besides collecting awards or being perfect, I would have laughed in your face. And if you'd told me it was going to be for getting caught in the boys' bathroom alone with me, I would have laughed in your face, but from a safe distance, because you were obviously a dangerous and insane person. But there we were, 5 minutes later, sitting on that bench of shame outside Stricker's office, waiting to get yelled at.
I can't believe this is happening, Jeannie whispered. This is so totally unfair.
No talking, Mrs. Harper said from the secretary's desk. Jeannie just shook her head. I couldn't tell if she wanted to yell or cry or both. So when Mrs. Harper looked away, I wrote a quick note on an old tardy slip and passed it to her. It said, Buck up. She actually smiled when she read it. But that didn't last long. Mrs. Stricker opened her door about 2 seconds later and told us to come inside.
Now, can one of you please explain this little stunt to me? She said. Jeannie?
It wasn't a stunt, Mrs. Stricker, Jeannie said, talking really fast. It wasn't anything, I swear. We were just tutoring and...
Tutoring? Stricker said. In the boys' bathroom?
It's not her fault, I said. I went in there first, and I wouldn't come out. Stricker just looked at me like I was speaking Russian, and then she looked back at Jeannie like she was supposed to translate.
The point is, Jeannie said, nobody got hurt, and nothing really happened. I mean, it's not like any rules got broken. Not really.
A very important rule was broken the moment you went into that restroom, Mrs. Stricker said. I'm afraid after-school detention is mandatory in this case.
What?
Jeannie said. Come on, I practically yelled. That's totally unfair.
Watch your tone, Mr. Cacciadorian. You could just as easily wind up in that detention with Mrs. Galetta, Stricker said.
It took me a second to catch her drift. Jeannie and I looked at each other at the exact same time.
Hang on, I said. You're giving her detention, and not me.
Stricker shrugged.
Rafe, I don't think for a moment that you're blameless in all of this, she said. But the fact is, it's not against the rules for a boy to be in the boys' bathroom. I'm sorry, Jeannie, but my hands are tied.
Then the fifth period bell rang, and Stricker stood up. This conversation was over. She even took us out to the hall to make sure we'd go straight to class. Jeannie and I walked away like a couple of zombies.
I'm really sorry about this, I told her. It's not your fault, she said.
But it kind of is, I said.
If I hadn't gone into that bathroom in the first place, this never would have happened.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it now, Jeannie said. But again, I wasn't so sure. In fact, I could think of at least one thing I could do. I looked back to make sure Stricker was still there in the hall and waved my arms to get her attention.
Hey, Sergeant Stricker!
What are you doing?
Jeannie said, but I ignored her.
Hide and seek! You're it!
I yelled as loudly as I could, and then ran straight for the nearest girls' bathroom. Chapter 62. Game Over. So I got that detention to go along with Jeannie's. But guess what? It didn't make any difference. Once I thought about it some more,
I realized I could have gotten 100 detentions, and it wouldn't change the fact that Jeannie had gotten hers. All because of me. Bottom line, I'd broken my own no-hurt rule. Big time. And I didn't need Leo to tell me what that meant. I just lost my third and final life in Operation RAFE. The game was over. As far as the mission was concerned, I was now officially dead. So not only was I flunking out of middle school, and not only had I hurt everyone who'd been nice to me along the way, but I'd also just crashed and burned in my very own game. End of story, right? Rafe Kachadorian equals total loser. Nothing more to tell. Chapter 63. Something else. Except, you're not stupid. There is obviously more to this story. It's like when the guy in the movie goes off a cliff, and you're supposed to think he's dead. But you also know it can't be over yet. Something else still has to happen. And something else did. Go to picture 75 to see Leo tell that part. But in summary, Leo told me to stop pouting and to get on with my big plan. I told him I couldn't because I lost my final life. He says, "So what? That's no excuse." He insists I go ahead with my idea. I remind him of the HVMS Code of Conduct. He chews that argument up and spits it out. Leo tells me to take the marker and get to work. I remind him again that the game is over, that I have no lives left. He bursts that bubble and remains persistent that I move ahead. I tell him he's crazy. He just shrugs and says, "Normal is boring." I think about that for a bit, then take the marker, and the two of us walk happily off into the sunset. Chapter 64. Thou shalt not vandalize. The next morning, I left a note for Mom saying that I had to go to school extra early to work on a project, which was basically true. I just left out the part about how early meant 4 in the morning, and project meant highly illegal activity. "You're not going to regret this," Leo kept telling me. The way he saw it, the whole point of Operation RAFE was about breaking rules. So why should I let a little thing like losing the game stop me from doing the part I'd been looking forward to the most? Like I said before, genius. When I got to school, I rode around behind the gym and parked my bike. There's a big empty wall back there, where we play dodgeball when Mr. Lattimore doesn't feel like torturing us himself. Before all of this, I would have just seen a wall. Now, I saw a giant canvas. I unpacked my new, fat black marker, a big old camping flashlight, and some of my latest practice sketches. I'd drawn these ones on graph paper, which is kind of like a brick wall, to show me how big everything would need to be. But Leo was feeling impatient. "You don't need those anymore," he said. "The clock's ticking. Stop thinking so much and just go." So I did. I set up the flashlight on a rock so that it was shining right at the wall. Then I picked up my marker and started. It was kind of slow moving at the beginning. I wasn't sure what to draw first or what order to do things in. But the more I kept going, the more I got into it. And then somewhere along the way, everything started to flow. "That's it," Leo said. "Put some more of that over there. And make this bigger. And try it like this. end? No. Bigger! Bigger!
He said that a lot. After a while, I was running around like crazy, working over here, working over there, and getting up on an old trash can to reach the higher parts when I needed to. The whole thing started to get so big that I felt like I was inside it, even while I was still drawing. It was like Leo had said, I wasn't thinking anymore. I was just doing it, like the marker was just another part of me, and the lines and shapes and pictures were coming right out of my hand. It was an amazing feeling. I totally lost track of time, too. All of a sudden, the sun was coming up, and I was putting my finishing touches on everything. My arm was so tired that it felt like it was ready to fall off. But my brain was still buzzing like crazy. I felt like I'd never go to sleep again in my life. In fact, I was so into it, I never even heard the police car coming. It pulled around the corner of the school, and the red and blue flashers came on right away. The car stopped short. Doors opened on both sides, and not one, but two policemen got out. I froze. I didn't know if I was supposed to drop my pen, put my hands up, or what. But the police weren't even looking at me. They were both just standing there now, staring at my wall.
"Holy smokes, kid," one of them said. "Did you really do all this?"
What I had drawn was a giant mural showing how I felt about HVMS. Basically, it showed the Dragon Lady, the Lizard King, and all the evil beasts at HVMS, and me as a knight, defending the castle with my trusty marker and freeing all the other oppressed students. Stay in school, kids, but remember, rules aren't for everyone. Chapter 65. 2 minutes later. Leo and I are in the back seat of the police car. Chapter 66. Time Out. Again. "Did you notice something there?" I said, "just me and Leo in the back of that police car?" Way back at the beginning of this story, I told you that me, Leo, and Georgia were in a Hills Village Police Department cruiser, and I said we'd get back to that part. No, I'm not messing with you. Yes, that part's still coming. We just haven't gotten there yet. Let me put it this way. Everything that happened that morning, with the mural and getting arrested, was just the beginning of the best and worst day of my life, all in one. There's still plenty more to tell, so stick with me. Chapter 67. House Arrest. As long as I'm at it, here's a pop quiz to see if you've been paying attention. What do you suppose Bear did when the Hills Village Police brought me home just after sunrise that morning? 1. He bribed the cops to go away and forget this ever happened. 2. He took me out for a delicious breakfast. 3. He went ballistic and started chasing me all over the house until I locked myself in the bathroom and Mom told him to calm down or she was going to call the police back herself. Answer, let's just say it's a good thing I'm fast on my feet. I stayed away from Bear after that, which wasn't hard since Mom sent me to my room until further notice. It was kind of like getting an in-school suspension without the school. I just sat there on my bed for hours, wishing I were somewhere else. Or someone else.
like maybe someone who wasn't a full-time disappointment to his own mother.
You've got to focus on the positive, Leo told me. That was a major masterpiece you pulled off today. Nobody's going to forget this one.
Yeah, including Mr. Dwight and Mrs. Stricker, I said. They're probably going to kick me out of school. A day earlier, I might have even thought that was a good thing. Now all I knew for sure was that I didn't want to feel this way anymore. Like no matter what I did, good or bad, and no matter how hard I tried, I just ended up back in the same place. Maybe Mrs. Stricker was right. Maybe I really was headed for the federal penitentiary someday. The ultimate detention. Around lunchtime, Mom came back in to talk to me.
I went to the school, she said, and I told Mr. Dwight you'll be painting over that mural this weekend. It's a shame, really. Anywhere else and I would have been impressed.
Are they going to kick me out? I asked. Mom sighed. She seemed really sad. Because of me, of course. Again.
I don't know, she said. We have a conference at school first thing tomorrow morning. Until then, you're staying right here.
As she started to leave the room, I told Mom I was really sorry, but all she said was,
I know you are, Rafe.
And then she closed the door. The only other person I saw that afternoon was Georgia. She brought me a pudding cup when she got home from school, but I think that was just so I'd tell her what had happened. I didn't yell at her, but I did tell her to get out and stay out. I just wanted to be alone with my thoughts. For the rest of the day, it was quiet. Nothing else happened until just after dark. I heard the TV come on in the living room, and I could smell onions cooking from the kitchen. That's when the doorbell rang, and everything went from really, really bad to really, really worse. Chapter 68. The Very Worst Part. I stuck my head out into the hall to listen.
I've got it, Mom said.
The front door opened, but then nothing happened.
That's weird, Mom said. There's no one here.
Oh, wait. What's this? I heard Bear grunt the way he does when he rolls off the couch.
What have you got there? He said a second later.
They were out on the porch now.
I'm not sure, Mom said.
Her voice was all far away, like she was thinking about something else. I heard papers rustling.
Not sure, Bear said.
He was getting crabby all over again.
Just look at this stuff. I'm telling you, that kid's nothing but a little hoodlum.
Don't talk about him that way, Mom said. And lower your voice.
Are you kidding me?
Bear said.
Listen, if you're not going to do something about this, I will. In fact, I'm going to get him right now.
No. You're not. Not like this, Mom said. The front door slammed, and they started arguing outside. I couldn't understand what they were saying anymore, but it was obviously about me. My blood started to pump. The next thing I heard was Bear roaring.
Don't tell me what to do!
Then Mom said something I couldn't hear. Then,
shut up, Jules! Just shut up!
I heard Mom yell, and then it got quiet, but not in a good way. I started running down the hall, and as soon as I did, I practically slammed into Georgia coming the other way. She looked really scared, and she was crying too.
Rafe, come help Mom, quick!
Chapter 69. The Famous Police Car Incident. As soon as I saw that Mom had fallen down the front steps, I told Georgia to call 911.
But
now,
I told her, and closed the front door behind me when I went outside. Bear was standing next to Mom, trying to help her up, but she wouldn't let him.
"Just get away from me," Mom was saying.
"Jules, I'm sorry. It was an accident. It was just an accident."
"I know that," Mom said. "And I don't care. Just back off, Carl."
It wasn't until then that I noticed all the pages and the big envelope with Mrs. K written on the front. They were scattered all over the porch, like somebody had dropped them there. And they weren't just any pages either. I recognized the handwriting, the drawings, all of it. They were photocopies of my Operation RAFE notebook, including a copy of every page I'd ever bought back from Miller, as far as I could tell. But I had bigger problems to deal with right now. I jumped off the porch and pushed Bear away from Mom as hard as I could. "Get out of here!" I yelled at him. His mouth was hanging open, and his eyes were kind of blank, like he wasn't even there. I'd never seen him like that before. He just backed away without a fight and stood in the driveway, not leaving, but not coming any closer either. "It's okay," Mom told me when I went to help her up. "It was just a push. He didn't mean to hurt me." Still, I stayed right there until the police came, with two cruisers and an ambulance. They put Bear in the back of one car. Another policeman started asking me and Georgia questions about what we'd seen, while the ambulance guys looked at Mom's wrist. Georgia was crying the whole time, and I held onto her hand, which, believe me, is not something I usually do. The whole scene was crazy. It was totally insane. "I'm okay," I kept hearing Mom say. "I'm fine." Still, they wanted to take her to the hospital for some x-rays, so she got into the back of the ambulance while Georgia and I watched. We weren't allowed to ride along, but the policeman said he'd take us. "I'll see you there," Mom called out.
"We'll be right behind you," the policeman told her.
"And I'm right here, too," Leah whispered,
which was kind of a big deal for him, since he hardly ever talks when other people are around. But I appreciated it. And by the way, if you're still wondering, Georgia, Leo, and I were together in the back seat of the police cruiser, and Bear was in handcuffs. Chapter 70. Mom. Mom was okay. They put an ACE bandage on her at the hospital and then called a taxi for us to get home again. She sat in the back with her arms around us the whole way, even with her hurt wrist and everything. When we got home, the first thing I saw was that someone had put all those pages back into the envelope and left it on the porch. I wasn't too happy about it, but Mom didn't say anything. She just took the envelope into the house with her, and I didn't see it again after that. Inside, there were a couple of messages from Bear on the machine, saying how sorry he was and thank you for not pressing charges, and how he was going to be staying at a buddy's house for the time being.
"Jules, call me," he said. "Here's the number, 524.
Mom hit the erase button before he could even finish. It made me want to cheer.
"Come sit," Mom told us. "I want to have a talk."
So we all sat down at the kitchen table with one empty chair where Bear usually ate.
"Things are going to change around here," Mom said. "Bear's not going to be living with us anymore, and hopefully that means I can afford to stop working double shifts at the diner, too."
Now we did cheer. This was the best news I'd heard in forever. But of course, the cheering didn't last long.
"As for you, Rafe,"
Mom said. There's still a lot we have to deal with.
I know, I said. And Mom, I'm really sorry.
It felt like I'd been saying that a lot lately. Too much, in fact.
Mom reached over and put a hand on my shoulder. But seeing that bandage on her wrist just made me feel worse.
What happened tonight?
This was all my fault. I
didn't even know I was about to start crying. It just kind of started on its own.
All of a sudden, there were tears coming out of my eyes, and my face was all scrunched up, and I was bawling like a baby. The weirdest part was that I wasn't even embarrassed. Not even with Georgia sitting there gawking at me.
This wasn't your fault, Mom said. Not even close.
I'll bet you wish you could just have a normal kid sometimes, I said, wiping my nose on the paper towel she gave me.
I'm normal,
Georgia said.
That's not how I think about it, Mom said. It's true, Rafe. You've made some bad choices for too long now. But I've made some bad choices too, haven't I?
I knew she meant Bear, but I didn't say anything.
In any case, we'll worry about all this in the morning, okay? Mom said.
Then she leaned over to whisper in my ear.
And I think normal's a little boring, don't you?
Hey, no whispering!
Georgia whined.
That's what Leo says,
I whispered back, and Mom smiled, a kind of happy, sad smile.
Where do you think he got it? She said.
Where who got it?
Georgia said.
Got what? What are we talking about?
And even though I knew Leo wasn't actually there, and that he couldn't really give me a thumbs up from across the table, that's exactly what he did anyway. Chapter 71. It had to happen sometime. When Mom brought me to school the next morning, everyone, and I mean everyone, was staring. I guess that meant they'd all seen my mural, which I guess was a good thing, since it was going to be gone by that weekend. A lot of people were whispering and pointing, and one guy even took a picture. But nobody said a single word to me, with one exception. Miller was leaning against the trophy case, watching when I came in. He had that same stupid smile on his face as always, like a giant baby who just made a good poop in his diaper.
"Hey, Catchadorian," he yelled over. "You get my package?"
Now, believe it or not, I'd almost forgotten about that envelope. I'd spent the whole night blaming myself for what had happened. I hadn't stopped to remember how it all had kicked off with that ring of the doorbell, just before Mom and Bear started arguing, and Georgia couldn't stop crying, and Mom ended up at the hospital! I pulled away from Mom and ran right at Miller, just like the last time, except now we were face to face. I didn't even slow down until my fist plowed into his gut at full speed. Miller looked totally shocked, but that didn't stop him from swinging back and smashing me in the nose. I felt the blood almost right away. I started to go down, but I grabbed on and twisted him around until we were both on the floor, rolling and throwing punches wherever we could. He nailed me hard in the stomach. I got him, kind of, in the eye. Then Mr. Dwight was hauling us off each other, and Mom was pulling me away from Miller. We were both still yelling and screaming. I don't even remember what I said, but I probably couldn't say it here anyway. My shirt was ripped down the front. I felt like I was going to throw up, and I was still bleeding. But I couldn't help noticing that I was also still alive. I was in bigger trouble
than ever now, if that was even possible. But I just survived Miller, kind of the way I'd survived most of sixth grade. A little beat up. Okay, a lot beat up. And not exactly a winner, but still standing. That's more than anyone in the whole school probably would have expected from me. Including me. So I'll take it. Chapter 72. The Big E.
"Well, if it wasn't settled already, it is now," Mr. Dwight told us. "Rafe, you're being expelled from Hills Village Middle School for the rest of the year."
I wasn't too surprised, but still, I couldn't even look at Mom. She probably wanted to finish what Miller had started and kill me right now. We were sitting in Mr. Dwight's office, along with Mrs. Stricker. I had an ice pack on my nose and a safety pin to keep my shirt closed. I felt kind of numb, in more than one way.
"Rafe can continue to get his assignments and work on them at home," Mr. Dwight was telling Mom. "And, of course, you can re-enroll him in sixth grade in the fall."
It just kept getting worse and worse. Then Mr. Dwight's phone buzzed. He picked it up.
"Yes?"
he said. And then,
"Tell her we're in a parent meeting."
But a second later, the door opened anyway, and Ms. Donatello was there.
"I'll make it quick," she said. "I understand this is a private conference, but I'd like to offer one suggestion on Rafe's behalf, if it's all right."
Everyone looked at Mom now, including me.
"Please do," Mom said, and Donatello came in. "I was going to bring this up later in the quarter, but now seems to be the time," she said. She put a brochure on Mr. Dwight's desk, where everyone could see it. Dwight and Stricker didn't say anything. Mom picked up the brochure.
"Airbrook could be a perfect environment for Rafe," Donatello said.
And then she looked right at me.
"You'd have to take a longer bus ride, but I think you might like it there. The school is a combination of visual arts and academics, for non-traditional learners."
"What, like special ed?" I said.
"No," Donatello said. "It's a school for artists."
Now I started to get interested.
"Excuse me," Mrs. Stricker said. "Rafe is being expelled. Are you suggesting he should be rewarded for his behavior?"
"Not at all," Donatello said. "But I am saying that Rafe has talent. I've seen it all year long."
That was a first. I can't remember anyone using the words Rafe and talent in the same sentence before.
"What about his grades?" Mom said.
I was looking over her shoulder at the brochure, and there were pictures of kids standing at easels and making sculptures, and some stuff I didn't even know what it was.
"There's no question we'd have to work a bit on the academics," Donatello said. "But again, Airbrook is for students at all levels. If Rafe's portfolio shows promise, we might even be able to get him a needs-based scholarship."
"Portfolio?" I said.
"A collection of your artwork," Donatello said, "so they can evaluate your potential."
I was getting more excited by the second.
Right now, things were looking way, way better than I'd ever thought they could.
That is, until Mom opened her purse, reached inside, and took out Miller's little gift package from the day before.
"I wasn't sure if I needed to bring this up or not," Mom said. "But I think now maybe I should."
That's when I knew it was all over for me. Chapter 73. Mom Isn't Finished. A minute later, The copies of my notebook were spread all over Mr. Dwight's desk. It was all right there. The rules for Operation RAFE. Every school regulation I'd broken, and all those stupid pictures Leo and I had drawn along the way. Now everyone could see exactly how much of a juvenile delinquent I was. I just stared at the floor.
"Well, this explains a thing or two," Mrs. Stricker said,
and I could feel that art school slipping right through my fingers.
"Actually," Mom said, "that's not really my point."
I looked up.
"Yes," Donatello said. "I see where you're going with this. We've got the beginnings of a portfolio right here. Rafe, some of these sketches are just so... you."
"Say what?" I wasn't even sure what Donatello meant, but it seemed like a good thing.
"Mrs. Cacciadorian," Mr. Dwight said, "you're obviously welcome to enroll Rafe wherever you like, but it's important that he understands the gravity of his actions here."
"I couldn't agree more," Mom said.
"And believe me, there are going to be consequences." I could hardly stand it anymore. Where was this thing going to land?
"But you see, I've always known that Rafe is an artist at heart," Mom said. "It's in his blood. In fact, he's named for the great Raphael Sanzio of Urbino. I named all of my children after artists I admire. Rafe's sister is named for Georgia O'Keeffe."
"Nice choices," Donatello said, smiling.
"And," Mom said, "Rafe also had a twin brother." Now I just wanted her to stop talking, but of course she didn't. She kept going. "His name was Leonardo," she said.
"For Leonardo da Vinci?" Donatello asked.
"That's right. Unfortunately, Leo died very young," Mom said. "He got sick with meningitis when the boys were just 3, and we lost him." Donatello put a hand on Mom's shoulder. Mr. Dwight and Mrs. Stricker looked like they didn't know what to say.
"It was a long time ago," Mom said, looking at me now.
"But, even so, Leo's still with us in spirit. Isn't that right, Rafe?" I just nodded. It was true, after all. And I guess I owe you an explanation.
Chapter 74. An Explanation. You're probably thinking, "Hang on a second! All these chapters, and all this time, and he's just now getting around to telling me that this Leo guy was actually his brother?" And I guess the short answer is, yes, that's what I'm telling you. And no, I'm not crazy. I'm okay. Really. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it at all, but I figured, if you've stuck with me this far, you deserve to know the whole truth. I don't remember that much from when Leo was around. His hair was lighter than mine, and he was, let's face it, kind of pudgy. In all the old pictures, it's like there's one and a half of him next to one of me. But we were both pretty little when he died. I just remember it got really quiet around the house, and my grandmother came to stay with us. Then somewhere along the way, I started imagining what it would be like if Leo was still around. And it just kept going from there. For the record, I'm not saying Leo's always going to be there, like he has been so far. Maybe I'll outgrow him. Or maybe I'll even find a real human best friend someday. Who knows? If that happens, I'm pretty sure Leo wouldn't mind. He'll always be my brother, and that's no matter what. In the meantime,
I like things the way they are. Maybe that makes me weird. Maybe it's even part of what makes me an artist, like Mom said. But it just kind of works for me this way. Well, except for the part about how I got into all this trouble and was about to get expelled. I know. I'm working on it. Just keep listening. Chapter 75. The Big Catch. Now that Mom had told Mr. Dwight and Mrs. Stricker everything there was to tell, they all kind of sat there looking at each other. "So anyway," Mom said, holding up the Airbrook Arts brochure, "if there's anything I can do to help make this happen, I want to do it." She put the brochure back on Mr. Dwight's desk, kind of like the ball was in his court now.
"Mrs. Catchadorian, first of all, let me say how sorry I am for your loss," Mr. Dwight said.
"We both are," Mrs. Stricker said, and she even looked like she meant it. "Thank you," Mom said. "Now as for Rafe, may I make one more suggestion?" Ms. Donatello cut in. Everyone looked over at her. So far, she'd been on my side, so I definitely wanted to hear what she had to say. "Let Rafe's expulsion stand," Donatello said. "Keep him out of school for the quarter, but then let him enroll for a full schedule of classes in the summer session."
Screech! Crash! Blam! Aoog!
There it was. The big catch.
Summer school!
I knew there had to be something.
"I can work with Rafe," Donatello said, "on academics as well as the portfolio, and we can see how it goes."
"Rafe?" Mr. Dwight said. "What do you have to say about all this?"
All of a sudden, everyone was looking at me, and nobody else was talking. Here was my chance to say something smart. "I don't want to go to summer school," I said.
"What?" Mom said.
Mrs. Stricker smiled a little. Donatello looked like she'd just been totally shot down. "But I'll do it," I said, right to Mr. Dwight. "If you'll let me." He and Mrs. Stricker kept looking at each other. I wasn't sure if I'd convinced them, but then I thought of one more thing to say. "Maybe I could do a real mural, too," I said, "with paint and everything. Something for the school, like, to say I'm sorry."
"Actually," Ms. Donatello said, "a project like that could make an excellent part of the application to Airbrook."
She looked over at Dwight and Stricker.
"That is, if we move ahead with this, of course."
At first, nobody else said anything. Then, finally, Mrs. Stricker kind of shrugged, and Mr. Dwight spoke up.
"It would have to be something appropriate. We'd need to see sketches before any paint goes on any walls."
"No problem," I said.
"And none of this can start until the summer session," Dwight said.
"And even then," Stricker said,
"if we see any kind of behavioral issues?"
"You won't," Mom said, squeezing my hand. "Right, Rafe?" "Right," I said, and tried to smile like I meant it. Actually, I had no idea if I could pull this off. Not the mural, not the classes, not even my behavior. But it was worth a shot if it meant trading Hills Village in for art school.
Art school!
In the fall. Maybe even as a seventh grader. Besides, if nothing else, I figured I owed it to Mom, and to Leo the Silent, and Donatello the Dragon Lady, and yes, even Jeannie Galetta, to at least try this crazy plan.
Chapter 76. What happened next? So that pretty much brings us up to the present. I'm still expelled. The school year's not over yet. And believe me, it's no more fun being out of school than it was being in school. Mom made sure of that. But first, let me tell you the good parts. About a week after all this happened, Bear came to the house while Mom was at work and got his stuff. He's officially moved out now. He even forgot his own secret stash of Zoom, which I've moved to a new hiding place that I'm not even going to tell you about. Meanwhile, Mom just works breakfast and lunch at the diner, so she's home every night. She's been making dinner for us ever since, and she's a way better cook than me, Georgia, and Bear combined. Also, after I got expelled, Jeannie Galetta actually called me at home to make sure I was okay. I told her I was fine, but I didn't know if I was going to be back at Hills Village in the fall. Then she said, "Well, maybe we should go see a movie this summer. My treat." And I told her, "I'd think about it." Okay, you can probably figure out which part of that isn't true, but it can't hurt to dream, right? And now for the not-so-good stuff. Mom doesn't let me stay home alone, so every school day for the last 6 weeks, I've been coming here to Swifty's Diner. Swifty let us set up a folding table in the storage room where I sit on my pickle tub and work on my school assignments. Which seems crazy, since I'm expelled. But tell that to my mother. I also spend an hour a day washing dishes, or sweeping, or cleaning up around the restaurant. Swifty calls it my room and board. And it gets me a free lunch every day, $8 or less, which isn't too bad. At first, I didn't think I was going to make it. Even with the homework and the cleaning job, there was still a lot of just sitting around, staring at the walls and waiting for summer school. Boo, to start. I had never been so bored in my life. But then I got another idea. One of my big ones, like Operation RAFE. Except this mission wasn't a game. It was more like a special project to help me pass the time. And guess what? You just finished listening to it. The end. For now.
This has been an Hachette audio production of Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. Written by James Patterson and Chris Tebbets. Read by Brian Kennedy. Illustrations by Laura Park. Produced and directed by Michelle McGonigal. Recorded by Tommy Herron. Edited by Chris Howerton. Sound design by Michelle McGonigal. Mastered by Tim McCarthy. Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2011 by James Patterson. Illustration copyright 2011 by Laura Park. Audio production copyright 2011 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the prior written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.